Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Today we have a very special topic to explore, and that is bees. Specifically, the loss of many honeybee colonies and what that means for us, them, and our food. And here's a quote that seems appropriate from the executive director of the UN Environment Program, Akeem Steiner. Human beings have fabricated the illusion that in the 21st century, they have the technological prowess to be independent of nature. Bees underline the reality that we are more, not less, dependent on nature's services in a world of close to 7 billion people. Now, if you've been paying attention to the latest news about bee colonies dying off, and like me, you don't know much about bees, you might wonder, really, what is going on? Personally, when I hear stories like this, my first reaction is that this is overhyped and driven by people with some financial or political motive, exaggerating a minor problem. And yet, it seems that the bee problems are not only real, but large in scope. So on today's show, we are on a fact-seeking mission with honeybees as our object. Our guest today is Dr. Eric Musson from the Department of Entomology, University of California, Davis, where he is an apiculturist. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Good morning. Whoops, maybe afternoon.
So did I?
Yes, you're correct.
So did I pronounce that correctly? And what exactly does an apiculturist do?
Well, if you think of a horticulturist as a person who deals with basically the culture of plants, if you will, an apiculturist deals with the culture of honeybees.
Good. Okay, so Eric, we continue to hear these news stories about massive bee colonies just failing. Please tell us what's occurring to these colonies.
Well, what the beekeeper sees when we had this problem is honeybee colonies that look pretty good. There may have been two or three boxes full of bees, and he might come back a week later and find the boxes basically empty. That's basically what it is, and we cannot tell you why that happens. We just know it does.
And, Eric, is this what is called colony collapse disorder?
Yes, that's the name that was attributed to it by some of the researchers because we couldn't think of a better name because we didn't know what the cause was. And a honeybee colony is supposed to remain in business 12 months of the year. They don't even wind down much for winter. They slow down and they form a cluster for the winter, but they're supposed to be alive all the time. And this phenomenon of all the bees in the hive just simply leaving when they have eggs and larvae and pupae to incubate, larvae and the queen to feed, they've got stored food in there. We just cannot explain why it is that they just one by one, not as a group, fly out and never come back.
So strange. Eric, where is this occurring?
It's been occurring basically all across the United States, some places a little more than others, but it's a thing that's happening. And although people call it different things in other parts of the world, it's seen elsewhere as well.
Now, give us a little biology refresher and describe what exactly honeybees do as they travel around.
Well, if we're talking about the foraging honeybees, what they tend to do is go out and more or less scout around the environment, and their environment can be within 50 square miles of the colony because they'll fly out to 4 miles and back for food. So they find potential sources of food, they find water, and they then collect that, bring it back to the colony. And we get into problems once in a while because the bees get into things out in that 50 square miles that we wish they didn't, and it's normally pesticide residues.
And describe the process of pollination, and why is that needed?
Pollination, simplistically, is the movement of pollen from one flower to another reproductive part of the next flower that's compatible with it. And I say that because in many of the uses of honeybees that we have, we need to produce hybrids, which means you've got two parental lines and you have to cross the pollen from one over to the other. But that then allows the pollen tubes to grow down into that second flower and get down into the seed area, produce a seed, and then you'll get a seed crop or you'll get a fruit crop or whatever vegetable crop, whatever it is that we're trying to produce.
Now, the process of getting our agricultural products to grow is heavily dependent on commercial honeybees. Can you describe to us how that works?
Well, generally what happens is a grower plants the crop and waits for it to grow up until the time that it's coming into bloom. And then in order to get that pollen movement that we're talking about, the grower contacts a beekeeper who has trucks and the ability to move bees, and frequently the bees are moved overnight from wherever they were right there near or in the orchard or the crop field, whatever it is. They wake up the next morning, and they're totally lost, basically, but they fly out, and it doesn't take them very long at all. They usually find the crop, begin moving the pollen around, and begin producing the crop. And then at the end, when they aren't needed anymore and the flowers are fading and going, then the beekeeper comes back some evening when all the bees are back home again, loads them up on the truck, and takes them off to do something else with them.
Wow. Wow. How do they know to all come back?
It's just something the honeybees do. I think there's sort of a preference for being back at home at night in the hive. So just about sunset, if you're out in the ag fields near those beehives, you'll just see bees coming back like crazy. And then they'll spend overnight, and then the next morning they're out and foraging again.
Wow. Now, you have written about the economic value of the bee industry and concluded it's very large. Is that correct?
Well, it is large. In the United States, it depends on who's making the estimate, but it's somewhere around $18 billion worth of crops here in this country depend upon honeybee for pollination. To put it in a more reasonable manner, perhaps, approximately two-thirds of the food items that we eat in our meals during a day, one way or another, are connected with pollination by honeybees.
So are we at a point, Eric, where without the honeybees, our food supply here in California or elsewhere in the world might be threatened?
Threatened is kind of a strong word, but what would happen is if we can't keep the numbers of honeybee colonies alive and functional that we want, then the production of fruits and vegetables in California and across the country would be limited. And under those circumstances, of course, the price would go up significantly. What we don't know, though, is whether or not there are other places in the world that might be able to produce these crops and replace them for us. They'd be more expensive, but they'd still be there.
And in your opinion, do you think the stories in the news are accurately depicting the importance of the situation?
Well, perhaps it's been overblown a little bit, because if you pick up some of these fictitious statements, like when Einstein said, if we don't have honeybees, we'll perish in 4 years from lack of food or something. No, there's something really wrong with that sort of reporting. But the truth of the matter is that the way we produce crops now in the United States, there is a very heavy reliance on honeybees, and it would be pretty painful if we didn't have enough of them.
Eric, I know you mentioned we're really not sure of the exact cause of this colony collapse disorder that we're witnessing. What are some of the possible causes of bee colony failures?
Well, one of the things that we think probably is involved in this is the fact that for a honeybee to be really robust and healthy, just like you and me, they have to have the right health foods. And from the standpoint of the honeybees, the proper health foods are a nice mix of perhaps six or more different kinds of pollen, all being brought in by different bees, so that when the other bees inside that eat the pollen and convert it into the food that they feed to the queen and the larvae and they share amongst themselves and whatever, keep all those nutrients up. And then you will have a bee that is best capable of fighting off some of these next things that happen. We have right now a parasitic mite called varroa, which is extremely difficult to control. There's a tracheal mite as well, but that one isn't so bad, I guess. We have difficulties with various virus diseases. We have a relatively new fungal disease in the intestinal tract of the bees they didn't have before. And obviously there's a pesticide issue. Some of the pesticides we're actually putting into the colonies ourselves to try to reduce the population of the mites on our bees. So you're trying to reduce one set of arthropods and another set of arthropods. That's not particularly easy. And then there are exposures, if the bees are used around agriculture, there's exposures to the agricultural materials that are being used out there. And even the backyard beekeeper sometimes sees problems with bees dying, and then they kind of look like they got hit with a pesticide too, because we some people use quite a few pesticides either in their gardens, on their lawns, on their ornamental plants or whatever, and that's an exposure to them also.
Very interesting. Don't go away. We're talking to entomologist Eric Musson, and you're listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of important issues concerning the welfare of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in our society. From whale protectors on the open seas, to lawyers in court, to scouts helping their local shelter, join me to get the latest on animal welfare news, stories, and events from around the world. And visit us on Facebook to join the conversation. That's Animals Today every week, right here on the stage. 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, make sure to visit us at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to any of our previous shows free. Animals Today brings you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics. Much of our support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
Every day in the United States, tens of thousands of puppies and kittens are born. Unfortunately, there aren't enough homes for all these cats and dogs. One unfixed female cat and her offspring can be the source of more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. One female dog and her unfixed offspring can produce about 67,000 puppies. Too many cats and dogs are unwanted anywhere by anybody, so they end up being neglected or abandoned. Millions of healthy pets are killed in shelters annually in the U.S. On average, 70% of the animals that enter the shelter end up getting euthanized. Fortunately, there is good news. There's a new answer to this dilemma. We can help to stop killing these animals by having our pets spayed or neutered. If you want a new pet, how about adopting one? You can rescue a cat or dog and save a life.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, aianimals.org.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep because someone broke into her apartment and stole all her sheep, not to mention a 50-inch flat-screen TV. Luckily, the Geico Insurance Agency had helped her with renter's insurance, and she got full replacement. She has since trained her sheep to do voice impressions of various attack dogs, and now feels very safe. Visit geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
Kid, if something in this facility breaks, bends, or bursts, Grainger's got our back. 20 cases of disc springs from Grainger.com, new rotary encoder ordered on Grainger's mobile app, a dozen splash goggles from the local Grainger branch. What more could you want in life? Grainger has over 1 million products for all our facility's needs. 1 million. That's a 1 followed by 6 zeros, kid. Everything we need whenever we need it. Get it? Got it? Good. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by. Grainger. for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're talking to Eric Musson about the loss of many of these honeybee colonies that's going on. Some people call them colony collapse disorder. Eric, have we experienced something like this before?
This is not the first time that we have had some unanticipated peculiar dies off of honeybees. We even have that in the literature from the late 1800s here in the U.S. The big difference, however, is the fact that now, instead of just being like a one-year phenomenon, which it was kind of over and over again through the history of bees in the U.S., in 1963, 4, and 5, it was a three-year phenomenon. And the one we're having now seems to be approaching almost a 10-year phenomenon. It's just strange that it's similar. If you go back and read what was happening in the 60s, it sounds exactly the same, except this is so persistent.
Wow. Now, why can't we employ technology to pollinate the crops and avoid using bees at all?
Well, I guess the trick there is that the pollen grains are really, really tiny, and millions of them have to be moved around, and we don't have any equipment like a pretend bee or a drone machine now with the propellers on it and all that kind of stuff that can get right down in there and then snuggle up with the flowers and get the pollen on them and then go to another flower and deposit it in the right place. We just can't do that.
Now, there are the private and hobbyist beekeepers. Are their hives dying off as well?
I guess as a generality, I'd love to tell you no, that they aren't. But in truth, it seems to be a little spotty. There may be a club that has been rearing their own bees in that area, and they're dealing with survivor stock, and they think things are going well, and then all of a sudden the whole club kind of has a crash. And then they get back on their feet again, and they'll go on for years and not have a problem. So it's not continuous with them, but even non-commercial beekeepers have this problem periodically too.
How about, can people who don't keep bees, can they do anything that might help the bees?
Well, I think from what we mentioned just previously about the fact that if they have many more pollens to eat and whatnot, they can be nutritionally as well off as they can be, and you'll have the most robust bee. So anyone who is willing to plant some things in their gardens or in their yards that are attractive to honeybees at some time of the year and produce some food for them, that's going to help for sure. And then you have to be a little bit judicious if you do have a garden or a lawn or ornamentals and you want to protect them from pests. Usually it's pest insects. If you're going to make applications of various pesticides, try very, very hard not to hit the flowers, particularly don't get anything on the pollen or the pollen-collecting bees, because that's generally what get our bees into trouble. They bring back contaminated pollen, and then they consume it over a period of time, and it's hard on them.
Now, bees are not the only pollinators. Eric, educate me. What other ways do plants get pollinated?
Well, many of the crop plants that are important to us are wind-pollinated. We call them grasses, whatever you want, but corn, you know, wheat, barley, oats, whatever. Those are all wind-pollinated. And although honeybees will go and collect pollen from corn if they're a little bit short on other pollens, that doesn't help corn pollination whatsoever. So rice, some of the major crops in the world don't require bees at all. But when you begin to get to the things that have sticky pollen, they have to be picked off of one flower and moved from one to another, which are more along the lines of the fruits and vegetables, then you need pollinators. Now, obviously, there are all sorts of native plants here in California and around the world that existed long before honeybees showed up, because honeybees came from Europe, and we didn't have them in the North American continent until 1622. So there have been and still are a whole bunch of so-called native bees out there that don't live in the social context with the exception of the bumblebees that our bees do. But they are out there, have been out there, and will continue to be out there pollinating, you know, the things that they pollinate as well.
Can any other animals substitute for bees?
There are certain animals that are specifically in tune with some of the different plants and their flowers that are out there that do a very, very good job. But no, I mean, if we're talking about something like a carrot seed field, let's say, I mean, we don't need a bee in the backyard in order to grow and pick a carrot and eat it. But somebody had to produce that seed. And in some cases, there are flies, there are beetles, there are butterflies and whatnot that will come out and be there. But you can't get the numbers of them onto that carrot seed field the way we can get them out there by trucking just, you know, colonies with thousands and thousands of bees in them to pollinate that crop.
Wow. And what areas worldwide are being hit the hardest with this colony collapse disorder we're describing here?
The CCD seems to be a northern hemisphere problem. They don't have nearly as much of a problem south of the equator for whatever reason. And I'm glad. At least they don't have so many problems. But we can't exactly explain that either.
Now, Eric, tell us, how did you get interested in bees and entomology?
In a nutshell, I wanted to be an insect pathologist, which means studying the diseases of insects. And when I got to the University of Minnesota, the person who was working not in their pathology lab but in another lab was a professor working with honeybee viruses. And I said, well, okay, that's fair game. Let's give it a try. And working with him, I became very familiar with the industry as well as the viruses of bees. And when this opportunity arose in Davis to be sort of a liaison, an in-between person, where I would work with the academics on one side and I would work on the real-world beekeepers on the other side, I just thought, boy, that's a nice mix. So I've been doing it for almost 38 years, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Oh, fantastic. How can my listeners learn about your work or read more about honeybees?
Well, in the old days, I used to say read a book, but we don't read books anymore. If you go to the web and just put my name in, Eric Musson, you'll come up with page after page after page of these URLs that you can go to. And I do have a newsletter that's up there available to anybody that goes back years and years and years now, so you can read the little articles in that. I have some things called bee briefs, which are little spot articles like varroa and how do you control it, that sort of thing. There's a lot of information, and if you want to trust what you're reading a little bit better, go to the places like Penn State University and Cornell and ours, other universities. Generally, that material is pretty much right online. Some of the other stuff you see out there is, it's not too credible.
And what's the most important thing you can say to my listeners right now about honeybees?
I guess I'll drop back to what I said before. Try to feed them well. Try to keep them away from pesticides. Keep up the good public relations. The general public's been incredible on this. I think they're great.
Eric, thank you so much for your expertise and appearing on Animals Today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
Don't go away. Up next, we have a quiz and about bees. We'll see how well Peter does. Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner from the animal welfare organization Advancing the Interests of Animals. Do you ever wonder what you can do to be nicer to animals or to help them? Here are a few things you can do to show your appreciation to our furry friends. You could donate to or volunteer at your local animal shelter. Walking the dogs and playing with the cats is a meaningful way to make a difference in the lives of homeless animals. You could be a foster parent. If you have the extra time and space, becoming a foster parent is a wonderful way to take some of the burden off our overcrowded shelter Sponsors by giving an animal a loving place to live until their forever home is found. Increase your appreciation for wildlife by providing a welcoming space for butterflies, hummingbirds, and other creatures, or by simply driving cautiously through areas populated by wild animals such as deer. You are acting with compassion. These are only a few ideas to encourage you to continue thinking about your personal kindness towards animals. This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit us online at AIAnimals.org.
Breathe it in, kid. Clean, fresh air thanks to these new air handler filters. They're more energy efficient, hold more dust, and are stronger than ever. And Granger's got over 3,000 different styles and sizes to choose from. Just ordered a new batch from Granger.com today. I love oxygen, kid. And this facility's got some great AO2. I'm breathing easier just thinking about these air handler filters. Get some today. Get it? Got it? Good. Call, click Granger.com/air handler, or stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
GEICO presents a man who just saved on his motorcycle insurance.
First off, my name is Daryl. Second, this is no motorcycle. This monster is 1,100 cc's of raw internal combustion power.
Feel the ground shake!
Now, I know what you're thinking. Where's this science teacher's logical attitude that goes with his sensible sneakers? Well, Mr. Rains on my parade, I saved a bunch on motorcycle insurance with GEICO. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got some young minds that need molding.
GEICO Motorcycle. See how much you could save.
Safety, safety, safety. I'm saying it three times. Studies show you need to hear something three times to remember it. So remember, safety, safety, safety is important to me, me, me. That's why I love Granger. Granger has the products to help keep our facilities safe and people safer. Say it with me, kid. Safety, safety, safety from Granger, Granger, Granger. When you think safety, think Granger. Get it? Got it? Good. Call clickgranger.com/safety or stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
There is something about the road that beckons, that invites us to pack up the family and leave the world behind. And there is something about an industry-leading unlimited mileage warranty on a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz that gives us the freedom to do exactly that. You take to the highway, rack up the miles for up to 3 years, and drive with the assurance that your Mercedes-Benz is covered. You have the security of being in a car that has been certified to Mercedes-Benz standards, while you enjoy a carefree ownership experience for miles and miles. But while the mileage is unlimited, your time to take advantage of our certified pre-owned sales event is not. Now through June 2nd, you can also receive complimentary prepaid maintenance and a 2-month payment credit on select models, plus 3 months of Sirius XM satellite radio. So hurry into your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer today and see why we say the odometer is there to record the memories.
See your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for complete details and limitations on certified pre-owned warranties.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
I've had the hardest time finding someone who loves me for me, not my money.
I just want to find the perfect match.
Finding the right car insurance company can be daunting, especially if you've been burned in the past. Visit GEICO.com to find the policy destined for you. One devoted to saving you money, making your life easier, treating you like a princess or a vegan warlock, whatever you're into. Your perfect car insurance company is out there. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Lori, how you doing?
I want to see how much you know about bees.
Yeah, I heard that this was coming. Not excited about this at all. I've been living in my little bee-free zone so far, and you're about to pierce that, I guess.
Well, we just learned a lot from our expert.
We did learn a lot. Very interesting. And I had no idea how much our food depended upon sort of commercial bee activities. Right?
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so there are three types.
So if you're standing next to one of these bee trucks in the evening, and they've decided they're about to come back to you.
No, I won't be standing.
I mean, they're not interested in you. No. They're going to fly right next to you and right into their little home.
Isn't that incredible?
Well, right by you.
Right by you.
Would you stand there and watch?
No,
waving?
I would not. I wouldn't be 3 miles within that area. Okay. There's three types of bees in the hive.
Okay.
Name them.
Okay. There is the queen bee. There is the is there a drone?
Yes.
And there is a worker.
Good, honey.
Really?
Good. Yes.
Oh.
Queen workers and drones. So male bees are called.
Wow. Workers?
No, those are the drones. Male bees are called drones. True or false, drones are not able to sting. So that's the male.
The males are not able. I would say that's true.
That is true. They have no stinger. So their only purpose
is
in the hive is to mate with the queen. True or false?
Wow. Hmm. Okay, I would. No, they probably drone work. Okay, true.
That's true. That's the male's only purpose. Wow. Is to mate with the queen. Male honeybees serve only one purpose, so they provide sperm to the queen, and about a week after emerging from their cells, the drones are ready to mate. And once they've fulfilled that purpose, they die. They die. That's it. Okay? The lifespan of a queen bee is around 2 to 3 years. She mates once for life and can lay up to how many eggs per day? So let's say 5 eggs per day?
No, I know that's not
250 eggs per day? 1,500 eggs per day.
I say 1,500.
Yeah, that's correct. So without a queen, the colony will eventually die. That's pretty much the story here. And okay, now let's talk about workers. That's the third type, right?
Workers.
Okay, we talked about drones, queen, now workers. All workers are female, male, or a combination of both?
Okay, I would say they're female.
They're all female.
We have a very ordered society here.
Number of worker bees in an average hive, 5,000, 10,000, or 50,000 or more?
Wow, an average hive. Average. Let's see. 5,000.
50,000 or more. That's why you won't see Lori going next to a hive. True or false, the bee will die if she stings?
I believe that's true.
That's true.
Yes.
And these workers perform a multitude of tasks to include tending to the queen, feeding larvae, feeding drones, nectar ripening, producing heat, collecting water, house cleaning, guard duty, etc. Okay. How many eyes does a bee have?
Oh.
Two, four, or five?
Oh. Wow. I should know this. I don't.
You should?
Two, four, or five. I don't know about... I'm going to say five.
That's right.
Mm.
Two with, good guess, two with compound lens.
Yes.
And three light sensors on top of her head.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
How many wings does a bee have?
That means you could do 5 cataract surgeries on one bee. good odds there.
Do their little lenses get clouded up and they have difficulty seeing their hive?
I don't think they live long enough.
Okay. How many wings does a bee have?
Wow. How about 4?
Very good.
Okay.
So you're doing pretty good for a person who knows nothing about bees. What gives a bee sting its ouch and its itch?
Oh. Yes, I don't know the name of this substance. Are you going to name it? Because it's
it is a substance. Yeah, right. It is stuff.
It's stuff.
It's a chemical called melanin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
Okay. How fast can a honey bee fly? 15 miles per hour, 30 miles per hour, or 60 miles per hour?
Wow, I'm going to say 15 miles per hour.
That's correct.
Wow.
Wings beat how many times per second?
Wow.
50, 100, or 200 times per second?
I'm going to say 200 times per second.
That's correct, which is about 12,000 beats per minute. And this actually contributes to the buzz we hear when she flies.
Yeah.
Okay. How much honey does the worker bee make in her lifetime?
Wow.
So 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey in her lifetime? 1/2 a cup? or one cup?
Oh, a lifetime. How about the little teaspoon size?
Okay, 1/12 teaspoon of honey in her lifetime, yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Little bit of portion.
Not much.
Like a little drop. How many flowers does a honeybee visit during one collection trip?
Okay, I'm going to say a lot.
Are you 5 to 10?
Yeah, no, please give me a choice.
10 to 20?
No.
50 to 100.
I say that.
Okay. It is 50 to 100. So worker bees need to visit around 2 million flowers to produce a pound of honey. Mm. And for honeybees, there's power in numbers, right? So from spring to fall, the worker bees must produce about 60 pounds of honey to sustain the entire colony during the winter. It takes tens of thousands of workers to get the job done. A single bee colony can produce more than 100 pounds of extra honey, and this is what is harvested by the beekeeper.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Extra honey.
Right.
Who's to say?
Right. What is the name given to the wine made with fermented honey?
Oh, my goodness. That...
You're an alcohol
honey,
specialist.
Honey wine. Let's see. Oh, let me know.
Mead.
Never heard that
okay.
word. Okay. How do you spell that?
M-E-A-D. What scotch liquor is made with honey?
Scotch liquor. Oh, how about, no, I don't know.
Drambuie.
Really?
Yeah.
Drambuie.
How many sides does each honeycomb cell have? 6, 8, or 10?
Six.
Six is right.
That I know.
How do honeybees communicate with each other? Do they release a chemical substance? They flap their wings faster, making a louder buzzing noise?
No.
Or do they dance?
It's the little waggle dance that they do.
That good.
I learned that in college.
You remember your bee biology? And
It was big news at that point for bee communication aficionados.
Oh, very good. So honeybees do a little dance, which alerts other bees where nectar and pollen is located. The dance explains the direction and distance.
Mm.
The workers now, we're on workers. How do bees stay warm and thus remain active all winter? So do they cluster for warmth?
Mm-hmm.
Do they hibernate?
Mm-hmm.
Or they can auto-regulate their body temperature?
Oh, okay. They don't hibernate. I think we've learned that. So they cluster.
Very good.
Okay.
Bees will disconnect their wings, allowing them to pump their wing muscles to create heat. I'm not sure what disconnect their wings
means.
What does that mean?
I think that means... that they're able to flap their wings faster than muscles can contract.
Ah.
So they need some other kind of mechanism to achieve those how many did you say, 200 beats per second many you said? I mean, muscle can't contract and relax that fast, so you need some other kind of mechanism to do that. I think that's what that means.
Oh, interesting.
I think the hummingbirds do that too.
Bees fly outside the hive normally when temperatures rise above 50 degrees. So I guess they cluster for warmth, and then when it rises, the outside temperature rises above 50 degrees, they'll go outside. So does that mean you won't find honeybees where the weather is consistently below 50 degrees?
Hmm. I think you do find them, but they maybe not. Maybe they don't have a good temperature gauge on them. I don't know.
Okay.
Do they go out?
I don't know.
You don't know? Oh,
I don't
okay.
know. I was asking you. Just reading some little tidbits.
I'm the authority.
Yeah. I'm trying to have you explain what I'm reading here. Okay. The honeybee is the only insect which produces food that is consumed by human beings. Is this true or false?
Mm.
The only insect which produces food that's consumed.
I'm going to say that's true.
That is true.
So they produce this honey.
No other insect.
Okay.
Yeah. How do honeybees build a honeycomb?
Hmm. Well, they, where's the wax come from?
That's good. Good. That's right. Honeybees produce wax from glands located at the underside of their abdomen, and they use this beeswax to build a honeycomb. Mm. And humans use this wax to make candles. And furniture polish, etc.
Furniture polish?
Yeah, that's what I read. Yeah.
That's gross. And this hexagonal thing, that's pretty consistent, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No square honeycombs.
So. Right. Okay.
Well, thanks, Lori. That was nice torture.
Okay,
I appreciate that.
I think you did very well.
Well, thanks for listening to Animals Today. As you know, sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Visit us on AIAnimals.org. Visit Animals Today at AnimalsTodayRadio.com. We are coming to you weekly from our studio audience here in Southern California, broadcasting across North America and the world. Check us out, animalstodayradio.com. Stick around. Got some news items. Don't go away.
Temperatures climb. Please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, aianimals.org.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now. 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
You know Lumber Liquidators for having the best selection of flooring at the lowest prices. And right now, you can buy one floor and get 50% off another on their thickest and best Dream Home laminates. No games, no gimmicks, just huge savings off already ridiculously low prices. Plus, get great deals on pre-finished hardwood and Morningstar bamboo. So go to LumberLiquidators.com to find the store nearest you. Special financing is available. But hurry, this buy one, get one sale ends Tuesday, June 3rd.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Breathe it in, kid. Clean, fresh air thanks to these new air handler filters. They're more energy efficient, hold more dust, and are stronger than ever. And Granger's got over 3,000 different styles and sizes to choose from. Just ordered a new batch from Granger.com today. I love oxygen, kid. And this facility's got some great AO2. I'm breathing easier just thinking about these air handler filters. Get some today. Get it? Got it? Good. Call, click Granger.com/air handler, or stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Some clubs are pricey.
$25 for a cheeseburger?
Some are exclusive.
My family came over on the Mayflower.
And some are snooty.
Is she wearing white after Labor Day?
But America's Best Value Wins Value Club is just right for everyone who wants to save instantly. Value Club members get 15% off, room upgrade, and late checkout when available at most of our 1,000 hotels in North America. Go to americasbestvaluein.com and sign up today.
Now that's better.
I've had the hardest time finding someone who loves me for me, not my money.
I just want to find the perfect match.
Finding the right car insurance company can be daunting, especially if you've been burned in the past. Visit GEICO.com to find the policy destined for you. One devoted to saving you money, making your life easier, treating you like a princess or a vegan warlock, whatever you're into. Your perfect car insurance company is out there. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Welcome back to the show. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Lori.
What do you have for us today?
Oh, number shark stories.
Shark stories.
Okay. Sharks.
Go for it.
Shark story number one. A bunch of paleontologists working in New Mexican desert. They come across some remains showing a shark they're calling the Godzilla shark, lived 300 million years ago. And so it's interesting. You're working in the desert and you come across shark remains, prehistoric shark remains from a time when that area was ocean.
Wow.
This shark, they're calling it the Godzilla shark because its interesting features, it's got teeth on its outer lips. So you've got these big bony protuberances on its lips and these huge spines that are sharp, and they just thought that it looked like a Godzilla. And these teeth, they hypothesize, are used to help sort of ram into their potential prey. This is a different earlier mechanism of a shark getting the potential food into its belly.
Well, yeah, 300 million years earlier.
Yes. So now, apparently modern sharks, they like to suck as they bite. So they just, you know, widely open their mouths and causes an influx and you get sucked in as you're bitten. So
yeah,
this shark apparently didn't have that technique yet.
Mm.
Shark story number two, the so-called goblin shark. You ever hear of the goblin shark? Take a look at this picture here.
Wow.
This was actually caught and released in the Gulf of Mexico. And there's this picture I will describe to you. And these fishermen were doing, well, they were shrimping. They got these big shrimp boats, and they pulled this specimen of a shark in their net onto the deck of the boat, and fortunately they took a quick picture of it and they released it. And this shark looks like it's truly from another world. It has a long, huge, pointy snout, and then below it, almost disconnected from the rest of its body, is just a set of jaws that is so horrible it looks like something from Aliens, that movie series. It's just the scariest looking thing. Look, it's like
it is the scariest mouth I've ever seen.
Yeah. And that the teeth on this goblin shark are just little sharp daggers. They're not like your regular sort of triangular shark teeth. These are like little pointy spikes. That's what they look like. And this thing truly looks like it was just plopped here from another universe. Anyway, these guys threw it back in the ocean. This is probably a shark that likes the deep seas. It's rather rare. They think it eats squid and other small fish and spears these fish with its teeth.
It was nice of them to throw that back in the ocean.
It was, rather than all the other things that they usually do when something like this happens.
Right.
Let's eat it.
Let's show it off.
Let's stuff it.
Right.
Right. So.
Wow, that is the scariest thing I've ever seen, I think.
Oh, it's
now I'm going to have a dream about it tonight.
Yes, dream. Not a happy dream. Shark story number three. The megamouth shark. Not, this didn't have a happy ending like the goblin shark story, but some time ago, recently, in Japan, fishermen caught a very, very rare megamouth shark. This one was dead. They performed an autopsy on it. This shark is about 1,500 pounds, and reportedly it was caught at a depth of 2,600 feet. They're not saying how they got it or what was involved, but it ended up to be a big, huge, dead shark that they took a picture of. And megamouth sharks are extremely rare. They are endangered. They are up to 18 feet long. They have this huge, large, broad mouth and these tiny little teeth. The mouth is... And they've got this other feature called photophores. You ever hear of that? Photophores are these little light-emitting organs around the lips of the shark. And so that is supposed to attract the plankton, which they eat, that they eat, right? So too bad. This, a very rare shark, killed as a consequence of the fishing industry.
Right. It
makes you a little sad.
It is.
All the time.
It is. It does happen all the time.
And, you know, these are beautiful creatures. Even if you don't want to snuggle up to them, you know, leave them alone.
Leave them alone is right.
And to put a emphasis on that point, we've got the shark story number 4, in which a huge shark was caught by these sport fishermen down in Florida. They actually caught an 805-pound shark. They were trying to somehow evade detection by driving away with their pickup truck, and you've got this picture of a huge thing falling out of the back of a truck tied in there, and some guy at the filling station where they took a picture of it and went viral, and then they realized they can't hide this huge catch. And the crazy thing about this is that these cousins, Ernie and Joey Polk, they have records for shark fishing associations. They, like I said, they tried to keep it secret so they wouldn't be swarmed. Well, this shark, which was a shortfin mako shark, they just obviously couldn't keep it under wraps. They ended up serving this at a barbecue. So people just ate this thing. They made an event out of it. These guys claim that they are ethical fishers. They say they, in 2013, they caught 300 sharks and they only kept 20 of them. So therefore, they are good participants of the National Marine Fisheries Service Cooperative Shark Tagging Program. So they are claiming that they are doing a good thing. They say what they do is just a good pastime and that they fish ethically. And they describe the ways that they engage in ethical shark killing practices.
Right.
So it's just a real shame. You see, and I just would urge you to Google or type into your search engine 805-pound shark and look at the image of this huge thing that they caught just for the fun of it. It's really a shame.
And where's the logic?
The logic is completely contradictory, and the fuzziest thing to conceal or hide what they're doing, even...
Right.
I mean, they're sport hunting.
Right.
And throwing back most of the little fish. Everyone throws back the little fish. You can't say we're only keeping 20 of 300 and therefore we're ethical.
That's right.
And give me a break. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Interesting shark news stories.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, and thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
IR KRN USA News, I'm Bill Morrison. The release of a U.S. soldier captured in Afghanistan almost 5 years ago is now stirring a sharp debate over whether the U.S. should have negotiated a deal with the Taliban. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was freed yesterday after President Obama agreed to release five high-level Afghan detainees from the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.